first question of the day is, what do we need? Someone new, modern day poskim and chubis, when the Shulchan Aruch has already written. So what we want to try to do is figure out which types of issues might not be really so clearly concluded in Shulchan Aruch that there should be any issue afterwards. So some, the easiest, the lightest, I don't know, the first thing is sometimes Shulchan Aruch doesn't give several opinions. Now there are rules for that. The rules are that generally speaking, if Shulchan Aruch says this is the halacha and he says yesh oimrim otherwise, so you go by the halacha, not by the yesh oimrim. When the Ramah chimes in with a, you know, yesh oimrim, that basically means Ashkenazim hold differently than the Sfaradim. So sometimes you do have issues where Shulchan Aruch himself brings a few opinions and doesn't really clearly, you know, spell out what exactly we should do. Okay, that's an easy one. Doesn't come up that often. The other easy example is when cases come up that are just not clearly the same as in Shulchan Aruch. So what do you do about this type of scenario with electricity? What do you do about that? When certainly that's not going to be addressed clearly in Shulchan Aruch, right? Yeah. And then you have sort of like a middle ground where Shulchan Aruch makes a state clear opinion, but that is not agreed upon by the others even during his time. You have several examples where the Ramah will chime in with something, or sometimes even an attack, so to speak, on the Ramah by the Taz, the Shah, whoever else, where they're saying, we'll get it from, where they're saying that what the Ramah, what the Mechaber says, is really not so simple. He has his opinion based on his rationale, but it's really not agreed upon by later Achronim. And so his Pesach was not really agreed upon.
So it's the Ashkenaz.
Even by Sfaradim. Even amongst Spartan, there are going to be cases that come up where the Machaber is passing in a certain way that wasn't necessarily always agreed upon. Okay. Those are, I think, probably my best guess, the three, you know, most common examples of it. So you have a lot of discussion over things that have come up, how to properly pass in what the Machaber himself says. And then, you know, the Mechaber passed in this way, but you have a whole slew of Achronim that, you know, they didn't agree that's how we should pass in, so then what comes up, halacha, and I say. That'll be my guess, best guess. But, gotta pay attention to each case that comes up.
So, in summary, the rabbi that disagreed with Shulchan Aruch?
So you remember how it got to Shulchan Aruch, right? How it got to Shulchan Aruch was that the Tur was the son of the Rush. See, he collected all the opinions of the Rishonim basically at his time. Major Rishonim, major poskim, the major poskim of Rishonim. That commented on the Gemara, right? The Rishonim that are after the period after the Gemara. There's the Gemara, that's the Amoraim, and you have maybe a slight period in between, but basically the next period is basically the Gaonim. Very short period, and we don't have necessarily so much from them. And it wasn't, I guess, as definitive in a certain sense. And then you have what's called Rishonim. What?
Are they in the
Gaonim? No. Every once in a while I have some editorial comment that is suggested this is an addition by the Gaonim. You do have it occasionally.
Shmuel.
This is Rav
Shmuel.
In the
Gemara? Yeah.
Rav and Shmuel are both, Rav is an early Amora.
Uh-huh.
He's considered to be a Tana because he was in between. And Shmuel is already considered to be an Amora. So that's the conclusion of the Gemara with the Amoraim. And then you have the period of the Goyim, basically. There's a period called the Savoraim. Those are the people that they say perhaps did finish editing the Gemara. But we don't hear too much about them. And then you have the Goyim, or of High Goyim, or Sadia Goyim, the famous Goyim, but there weren't so many of them. And then comes the period of the Rishonim, which is a very, you know, very significant period after the close of the Gemara. And the Goyim were also after the period of the close of the Gemara. And then they're commenting on halacha lemaisa, trying to apply things, and how do you get from the Gemara to modern day. But they didn't always agree. They didn't always agree on interpretation of the Gemara.
So how do you come to a conclusion?
Right. So that was how the tour began. The tour began by collecting the opinions in the Rishonim. What is the pshat in the Gemara? And based on that, what should come out halacha lemaisa? But he didn't really say what you should do. He just said, well, the Rambam says like this, and my father said like this, and Rashi says like this. You know, like he kind of collected opinions. Which is great for a person that's a post-take and feels capable of doing anything with that. For people like us, what do you do with it? So Kim came along with Beis Yosef, Yosef Karo, the same author as the Shulchan Aruch. And he said, let me give you the background to where all this is coming from. And then now you'll understand what the Torah, all these opinions are saying. And based on basically the majority opinion, so this is what you should do. His majority opinion did not take into account Ashkenazim. So that's why the Ramwa comes in. But when...
So you guys got angry about that.
Got angry, yeah. We got angry about it. It wasn't Armasaur. Not Armasaur. So that's what...
It's too much.
Different Masaur? So that's what Rabbi Sakara did. So he formulated Shulchan Aruch based on that, based on the majority of, you know, the majority opinion over there.
How is it Masaur if they're Ashkenazim and Gemara? Like, how do you take every single one if they're Ashkenazim and Gemara?
It was really an issue after the close of the Gemara. Once the Gemara itself seems to have been accepted by everybody everywhere.
Yeah.
After the close of the Gemara, so then, yeah.
Because there was Baba and there was Israel, right? Do we take halacha from Yerushalayim also?
In a nutshell, like, you know, as a blanket statement, the answer is no. We pass them from the Babli, but there are obviously exceptions to the rule. You know, things that come up. But as a rule, we pass them from the Babli.
Okay. So the Gaon and the tithes of the first year to write everything down.
What happened basically was, you have the Rif is the first to cut out all the discussions in the Gemara.
Every single one.
He cuts out the discussion, just leaves you with the Gemara when the Gemara discusses the Halacha. And then you have the Rosh that kind of comments on it and brings in the Balei Tosfos and came along, the Rosh's on the tour, and he basically tried to reconstruct everything in categories that are Halacha L'maisa. Before that was the Rambam. Before that was the Rambam.
Oh, yeah?
First was the Rif, then the Rambam, and then the tour.
There are two major differences
in the Torah and the Rambam. That the Rambam is encyclopedic, and the Rambam doesn't quote anybody else.
What do you mean?
He doesn't quote anybody. He just says what the halacha is.
How does he know the halacha?
Because he decided that's the halacha.
He decided from reading Gemara.
From all of the ways that he concluded, which he doesn't explain. He just says it as it is. Oh, for sure.
For sure?
For sure. Nobody can do that. Nobody can do what he did.
He did everything.
It's unbelievable. It's just not like... I mean, you know, imagine a person living the time that the Rambam did and with the responsibilities of the Rambam. He was a doctor. He was a doctor for the Sultan. He had no time of his own. He describes in a letter to somebody that wanted to, like, talk to him. He's like, let me just explain my schedule to you, okay? And he goes through his day. It's a pella. The guy survived. He goes through his day. You know, he wakes up in the morning and he heads over to the Sultan's palace and he's there until whatever time of the day, taking care of everything for the Sultan. And then he comes home and he's got thousands of people waiting outside his door for medicine and for psychological help and this and the other thing. And then he's got to, you know, sometimes cases come up that he's got to deal with Siskei Halacha. And he passes out at whatever, you know, 3 in the morning, so to speak, you know? He just passes out. And the only time he had, you know, Shabbos afternoon, he has a little bit of time, he gives a drasha, whatever it is. I forgot all the details of his schedule. But it's just like an inhuman schedule. Like, how did he function with this? And then when did he have time to write anything? When did he have time to learn anything? What is going on over here? It's okay, this is obviously later on in his life when he had already accomplished a tremendous amount. And then Mustama, he was learning Yomam Valila when he was younger. But whatever it is, at some point he was able to collect all of Torah, reorganize it in his head, and then print it out and spell it all out in incredible order without a computer or anything else to do it with. How do you do that? You have to have like a photographic memory and you have to have a clear understanding of it all. It's unbelievable. It's a pella.
So he was like the, he did that?
He did that on his own. So that's their Rambam. But he doesn't quote anybody else. That's number one. He doesn't quote anybody else. And it's organized in an encyclopedic fashion. The tour...
What does that mean, encyclopedic?
That's the Rambam.
That's the Rambam.
Hmm?
What does it mean, encyclopedic fashion?
Let's say you want to look something up in the encyclopedia. So encyclopedia, it's in alphabetical order.
Okay.
So the Rambam is not in alphabetical order. It's organized by category. So if you want to know where to find a topic, you just have to look up where the topic is located. And you'll find everything on that topic. As opposed to if you want to know about aardvarks, you got to find an A. You look under A, aardvark, and everything about aardvarks. So here is a little bit different. If you want to know about aardvarks, you got to find the animal section. So where are the animals? You find where the book discusses animals. In animals, you're going to have to look under mammals. Under mammals, you'll find aardvark, that kind of thing. So the Rambam is encyclopedic, not by alphabetical order, encyclopedic in the sense that he took all topics and it's organized by those topics. If you want to discover any specific halacha, all you have to do is make sense out of where it belongs in Torah and just figure it out based on that.
What is this set? It's called the Mishnah Torah?
Mm-hmm. So you know where you want to know about truma. So where are you going to look for truma? So you have a few choices. You can look under Kohanim, but that's not where it's going to be because that's about the Kohanim themselves. So where are you going to look? You're going to look under all the issues that farmers have, which is called Zeroyim, seeds, farming. You know, so you look in the Rambam Sefer called Zeroyim, and in Zeroyim you'll see, okay, where is it going to be over here? It's in Matnos Aniyim. You're not going to give it to poor people, giving it to Kohanim. Anyway, so you'll find it over there. There's a whole section of Trumas Maestros. That's where you'll find it. So now, and then you just look in that, where the Rambam has all of the relevant issues that revolve around Trumas and Maestros, and you'll get an education in the global sense of what it's all about, and then you'll find the specific issue that you're interested in, so reading through.
Right, it's so cool how, like, throughout history, like, whether Judaism or, like, not Judaism, like, how people have had their work destroyed because people didn't believe in it, or like, you know, burned, and like, now today, like, we don't do anything but praise them. Like, as we, like, realize how...
Well, there still is some controversy regarding the philosophical aspects of the Rambam. It's true. No one's burning his books anymore. Yeah. That's true. But yeah, there was huge controversy in the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, people just died, like, down. They didn't know where anything came from, and he didn't source anything, and they just started burning his books.
Yes. So Rambam was tremendously controversial in his time.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And that's why we don't hold anything, because we don't know where it comes from?
What do you mean we don't have... We totally hold of him. What do you mean?
Not all the time. We won't.
Well, because he's one person.
So he came to conclusions to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
so then when the Torah came along, the Torah did it differently. He couldn't just say, oh, the Rambam says, because the Rambam wasn't the accepted authority of Kol HaTorah Kulo for everybody. The way he was one Rishon. And he didn't give his arguments. So so he collected all the opinions that he felt were relevant and put them together, organized not like a huge encyclopedia, every single topic in the world, but in the four main areas that he felt were very relevant. Halacha L'maaseh, we call them Orach Chaim, Yerideya, Eben Ezer, Chosh and Mishpat. So Orach Chaim is everyday issues that have to do with davening and the holidays and all those kinds of things that come up on a daily basis. Eben Ezer is women's issues, things that have to do with Purim Vu and all those kinds of things. And then getting married, divorced.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you could.
With Purim Vu, if you don't have, how many times after, if you only have like one, the mitzvah is to have two, like one boy and one girl. So
the minhag is we try to have two boys and a girl. That's the
two boys. The minhag is like to be fruitful, multiply, to have one of each, right? Like that's the mitzvah, right?
I mean, we hold the mitzvah, two boys and a girl. So we try to do two boys.
So what happens if like you just like have like one gender, like, for a long time?
Yeah, I know. I had that problem. You know, you keep trying.
because I know that there are some people who
from the thing.
Like, who will say like, oh, like, you know, I already had seven boys, and it's like at this point, like, I kind of have to stop trying. Like,
well, I have to stop. I mean, you had medical issues.
Well, no, meaning maybe maybe it's starting to get too expensive. Like, they can't afford a child. They can't.
Well, Shiloh's definitely sit down with the Rebbe opposed they can figure out what's the best thing to do.
Where do we get 2 and 1 from?
There's a whole discussion by Sol, by Shammai, what exactly they think that's hard to discuss.
Oh, yeah?
Many years ago.
From
how do they decide? I don't recall. But these are things easy to look up. Where does it all come from? And where's the shear for Purim Vu? Purim Vu is complicated because it's not within our control, So, but you try your best. But that's what the tour did. So he has those sections, and then Chosh and Mishpat is, of course, all kinds of financial issues. And Yerideya is sort of like whatever's left in a lot of ways is all thrown into that. Yeah.
What is this called?
The Arba Turim. Before Turim. It comes from the Chosh and HaMishpat. The Kohen Gadol wore the breastplate, Cheshen. The Cheshen had four rows.
This way.
Well,
if, let's say he's wearing it, it's this way, right?
I think it was.
Yeah.
think so. I think it was four across and three down, no? Four across three down? I don't know. So that's where it comes from. And then he didn't come to clear conclusions. So that's what led the Beis Yosef to his commentary and eventually to the Shulchan Aruch to come to clearer conclusions.
He took everything into his head.
And he gave all the background in Beis Yosef.
And you say that he learned with the angel through...
Magid, yeah.
How do you know this?
He talks about it.
He talks about it?
He has a whole sefer wrote about it.
Really?
Yeah.
So how can we not hope about everything he says?
Loi b'shamayim he. Anything that
Is
paskin by humans based on their understanding of what the Ratzon Hashem is, and that's what it says in Torah Lubash Shemayim. We're not allowed to paskin based on what we may derive from Nebuah or spiritual forces or whatever. We are clear. Yeah, that's the story. That's the story.
Okay. So
the So that's the Beis Yosef. That's how he understood we should conclude. That's why the Roma disagrees with him sometimes, because he didn't take into account the Ashkenazi post-camp and Kedbalei Taisus, Rashi. So we sometimes differ. Why should he? He's a Sephardi.
They're Ashkenazi and Gemara, and they got to argue with each other.
But there weren't really Ashkenazi and Sephardi and Gemara. There was the different story.
Their own place.
Well, there were always Gedolim and Eretz Yisrael. They were going back and forth. And they were in communication. Communication was a little more challenging back then. But there were people going back and forth. Kiyasa Rabin on Rabbi Yochanan comes up, I don't know how many hundreds of times in chess. Yeah, that's what you wanted to do, right? Put your whole face in the coffee.
It's so cold in here.
We're warmer now, but it was really cold this morning.
I came from my room, I didn't
I know, there was a... When I woke up this morning, there was a polar bear on the floor next to me and a penguin in bed. It was crazy.
So I don't understand how Ashkenaz and Sephardi even happened.
Because they moved to Spain and they moved
from back from
to Germany.
From Bobo and
from this place, no?
Yeah, it's where different customs come from.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Just from being in different places?
Yeah. I, the best I can do, I don't have a great hand, you gotta ask a historian, I'll be better at this. The best I can do is that as Jews began to spread out, and as Jews, some were in Babel and some were in Eretz Yisrael. That was the main Jewish populations for a long time. But then Jews really began to spread out. When did they begin to spread out? Well, there were always Jews, you know, pockets here and pockets there. You know, people were always finding a good parnassa somewhere else. Like, things were always spreading out. Eventually, the Jewish communities really began to spread out more, you know, later on in the times of the Goyim. But... So the bottom line of it is that because in the times of the Goanim and the Rishonim, the Gemaras were still being paskened. When you're talking about Rishonim, so that's what we're saying. There were disagreements among the Rishonim how to explain the Gemara. So because of that, eventually Beis Yosef says, okay, let's try to collect the majority opinion over here so that we can have one approach for all of Klal Yisrael. But until that was finalized, you had different communities that were really passing in different ways. So, good morning. But because they were passing the things in different ways in those different communities, so different approaches developed and different minhagim developed based on that. And eventually things became a little bit more centralized as the Shulchan Aruch was more and more and more accepted. But but by that time, certainly there were already Sephardi types of approaches based on those Rishonim that were in those lands. Who were the Sephardi Rishonim? Like the Ramban and his school, the Rashba and the Ritva, like they were all...
The big ones.
The Rambam, like they were all, you know, Sephardi and living in those areas that the Sephardim, what today we call Sephardim, came from. And so they had certain approaches to things that they were following.
Where'd they get them from?
You know, I was in the Mikveh Shabbos, and it was a very unusual occurrence. There was one guy there, you know, that lives in Pomona, like a Hasidish type of guy. Not a Chassid, but a Hasidish type of guy. Not exactly, but probably verging on it maybe, but yeah. And then Rabbi Richard, he's the Rav of the Shtibel across the street from my house. He was the first Rav in Pomona. So it's his mikvah. See, he was there. And then I walked in.
The Shtibel across the street from your house?
Yeah.
And they took both of them Friday night and Shabbat.
Yeah.
So you're in competition?
Yes and no. Yes and no. We're the Litvisha place. He's the Hasidisha place.
Oh, okay.
So in that sense, we're not. But there is a lot of overlap. There is a lot of overlap. And then all of a sudden walks in the Chabad rabbi, Rabbi Weber. So there you go. We had all three Rabbanim of Pomona in the mikveh at the same time. The last time the three of us together was not in a mikveh, but rather meeting about making a women's mikveh in Pomona. That was the last time we got
together. Did you guys get along?
Of course. So,
Of course.
Well, we don't have much to do with each other. I see Rabbi Richard pretty frequently, just because I daven in his shul a lot during the week. And Rabbi Weber, you know, we communicate every once in a while. But we all get along. We just don't. Unfortunately, I don't know. Depends on how you look at it. Like, we don't really have much to do with each other. Cause, like, what do we each run our own show? But in any case, so the guy that was there in the mikveh with us made some comment about all the rabbanim with Pomona, and then kind of makes this random comment about how we have to spread. You know, we have to spread chasidus because the three rabbanim were together. I looked at him. I thought, I don't know. I thought we were going in the opposite direction with me, trying to spread the Lithuanian entire around here. You know, they don't like to hear these things. Anyway, that's how it made me feel when he said that Sephardi is the right way to go. That reminded me of that Maisa Shahaya.
Are you guys coming from Shabbos? You guys coming from Shabbos?
So, what's the situation? Shabbat, when do we get, what time do we get back here? It's a Shabbat night.
I have to check exactly the timing, but Megillah is, you know, around.
What time Megillah here?
What time do you think the Chagig is going to start?
Nine.
Took a guess. Nine, 9:30, 10.
Can't be later than 10. Here, like, after?
Megillah is going to be in Pomona because it's going to be right after shul.
Oh, right, okay, right.
It's part
right,
of
right.
Mark. Okay. So Megillah will be Pomona. And then, you know, I don't know, we'll dance with the Kinderlock or something. I don't know, whatever it is that's happening at shul. This shops. This shops.
Wow.
And then we'll come back for the Chagiga here. And then the question is, what are we doing next? If anybody wants to just come back to Pomona,
yeah,
everyone's welcome to come back. Or if everybody wants to just stay in YU because it's your rooms and, you know, it's your stuff, so then, you know, bring your stuff back with you for the Chagiga, and then we'll work out rides to come back for everyone, whoever wants to come back for the Suda on Purim Day.
I was thinking of, you know, like I told you, like,
you know, either Shabbos nor Purim?
No, I'm going on a story show. Do you want to come to my house on Thursday night?
What?
You invite any other time. Just let me know. If you ever want to come for Shabbos, please let me know. It's a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, we'll drive on Friday. It's a possibility. If not.
Alright, so does that help you in terms of what you want to know about Shabbat from one up? Next topic, we're moving on?
Breaking bad habits.
Breaking bad habits? Okay. So let's talk a little bit about Breaking Bad Habits.
I watched some guy on YouTube who was pretty gay, and he said to stop. He said you have to, like, every time you catch yourself, you have to say you look weak. So, like,
no, I'm telling you, the best move is your manager. I'm sorry, like, I know it might be, like, in the ways of a woman, I don't know, but when I start biting nails a lot, I go and get a man. I mean, I haven't. Well, I've gone one or two men in my life because of my biting habits. When you get it, you stop biting for months.
Okay, so let's use this as a... Let's try... Maybe, I don't know. We'll have to figure it out.
What?
Can you get a manicure from a girl?
Why, you think that's like a sensual touch when she does her nails?
Sorry?
It's a sensual touch when she does her nails?
No.
No, for sure not.
Oh. I don't know. If it's not...
Or
anyway, okay, so let's try to talk this through. I'm definitely going to need your feedback to work this through. But let's try to talk this through. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong or if you can come up with another category, I think there are basically two types of bad habits that we have. One bad habit is basically the result of not thinking about what we're doing. And one is the result of, in a certain sense, thinking about what we're doing. And therefore, they have to be addressed in different ways. In other words, there are certain things that we do because we're just like have a bad habit, which basically is I'm not thinking about what I'm doing and I end up doing the wrong thing or what I don't enjoy doing. God or whatever it is, right? Whatever it may be. And the other issue is there's certain things that we do. Yeah, we just gotten into such a routine. And the other thing is, which is a result of just not thinking about what the right thing to do is. We've gotten into a routine because we failed to think about the right thing to do. And then the other issue is sometimes there are things that we do because we find them rewarding. So we find this habit rewarding for whatever reason, whether it's biological or psychological or whatever, and therefore we do it because, you know, we like it. So those definitely have to be addressed in different ways, because the one that's simply a result of not paying attention and routine, so that means basically you shouldn't really take more than breaking the routine and being more conscious of it to be able to overcome it. The more challenging area is going to be the habits that we have because we enjoy them. So they're giving us some sort of reward, and that's why we're doing them, and that's why we keep coming back to them, because we want that reward. So how do we go ahead and break those is going to require a little bit more than consciousness to be able to break them. So what are some etzos? So I found somebody made a list of 10, so we can talk about some of these and see if there are more as well. When it comes to getting ourselves, let's say it like this. There are two components of bad habits that we need to discuss. Of the bad habits that we're doing because there's some sort of reward to them, there's a cognitive, psychological component, and there's a behavioral component. We want to change the behavior, so that's the focus, but the behavior may be a result of a certain cognition. So one way we may want to address that is with rewards and punishments. We may want to say to ourselves, I want to avoid this behavior. So it's hard. So you could try by rewarding or you could try by punishing. You know, it depends on, I guess, sort of like what works for you or where you're holding. You could say to yourself, well, if I don't do it, then I'll reward myself with X. Now, the way to do that is to create some kind of behavioral chart or something like that. You know, you keep it to yourself. Put it on your forehead. But put it on the fridge, you know. Golden stickers. Stars. Golden stars. It sounds ridiculous, but it works. If a person says, listen, at the end of the week, if I am able to withhold myself a certain amount of times, not perfection. Perfection doesn't work. Not perfection. But if we assume there's a certain behavior that we're doing, I don't know, 3 times a day. And we say to ourselves, okay, if I'm only going to keep it down to 2x a day, so then every day that I manage to keep it to 2x a day, I'll give myself a check. And then at the end of the week, I'm going to buy myself, you know, X, let's say for Shabbos or something like that, you know, as a reward, my favorite food, I don't know, whatever it is, something. I'll get myself sushi, you know, because I like sushi. I'm going to buy myself a special sushi. So that's one way to do it in the positive. And the negative would be that a person's going to say, okay, if I can't manage to do it, so I'm going to find myself, you know, I'm going to put $1 in the push cart or something like that. But that can also be a positive in the sense that, you know, if a person, you know, collects a set, whatever, that's the positive element. The person instead can reward himself for the withholding, and then, you know.
When you're in the moment, none of that's going to matter.
Well,
you're not going to care.
It depends on the HR and things like that.
Yeah, and also when you say, like, rewards, a lot of people, like, they disregard the whole line. Hard to grasp concept of reward in heaven.
No, we're talking about reward here. We're talking about buying sushi. We're talking about something that you want. You want a new watch, so you need to put $1 away, you know, for the watch every time you manage to do it. The thing is, you have to be able, it has to be an immediate reward. It can't be something that's so long term. That's what you're pointing out. Is that if it's something that's too far away, then it's not going to work in the here and now.
I'm saying anything. You want that something's pointing you to do it.
There are certain, we'll call them bad habits that are so hormonally, you know, that it's going to be a lot more challenging. The reward, of course, is the issue, because any time that there's a tremendous amount of pleasure, so that's a reward that's hard to fight with. So you have to come up with something that's just as pleasurable or something like that. But step by step. Or you could fine yourself, you know, you could say every time you do it, so you're going to put $1 into the pushcart or something like that. You know, something that might be helpful is to do it in the exact opposite of the reward, you know, if that's the kind of thing that works better. So let's say in the beginning of the week to put aside, you know, a certain amount of money for whatever it is that you want to get. And so that money is there. At the end of the week, if you can keep that money, so then you're going to buy it. And then every time that you fail, so you have to take $1 out of the pot. So you see that you're not going to get it anymore by the end of the week, and you see the money dwindling in front of you.
That never worked for me.
Okay, not everything works. But in terms of a behavior chart, so generally what we try to do behaviorally is we say, okay, this is the behavior we want or don't want, and it has to be very concrete, and the rules have to be very specific, and it can't be all or nothing. Yeah? So it has to be, if you expect, you know, this happens a certain amount of times, so as long as it only happens whatever, so you get 3 out of 10, you know, so you'll get a check, and so, you know, you'll give yourself the $1 for the day or whatever it is. And then that reduces the amount of time it's happening, and then that can be increased like over time, and a person sort of builds up the...
How do you give yourself a dollar a day?
Because we spend our dollars on all kinds of things. But there are certain things that we probably don't want to spend our money on because it's something that we really enjoy doing, but we feel it's a waste of money. So those are the types of things you should reward yourself with. So pick one of those things and say, okay, I'm putting away a dollar for that specific purpose, and I'm not going to spend this dollar on the other things that I always get. And even though I usually think it's a waste of time, this is my reward for accomplishing. The cognitive element of all of this is that we have to know what types of things lead us to the bad habit. So we have to sit down and think to ourselves, forget the reward, like what's rewarding about it. Put that aside for a minute. But what are the situations that I put myself in that then lead me to this? So once you start to create gedarim, so when does it happen? It only happens, you know, when I'm doing certain things before that. It only happens when I put myself in a certain context. It only happens when X, Y, and Z. Okay, so now we know what situations, number one, to avoid. And number two, if we have to be in those situations, so then we know we're going to be in danger of falling into the trap of our bad habit. So then we already know what situation we're in. We can prepare for it ahead of time by just having the knowledge about what situations can lead to it. Then that won't really apply so much, right?
I'm serious. I'm learning from experience. You literally, you thought it would be pain on your nails. It's clear pain. Every time you're about to get your nail, it'll be like, oh my god, my nails are beautiful. No. I'm serious. It sounds really feminine and weird, but this is what stops me from biting my nails.
Right.
Like, it literally stopped me for 5 months, and now I started biting again. But
here you go.
So like, I'm actually inspired to go.
Why is biting your nails a bad thing?
It looks horrible to people. Yeah. It's not my natural diet. And it's a lot of germs.
My cuticles are all,
you get sick from my
stuff. I've got any infections.
Yeah, but it's not
like I played hockey growing up a lot, and one of my hands, because, you know, I bite my fingernails, you know, my cuticles and are exposed and whatever, and one time there was bacteria in my glove from the sweat, and I got a really bad infection in there, and, you know, it was really dangerous. They told me, like, if it would have spread, they could have had to cut off my arm.
Your arm or
if it would have spread up my arm. Oh. It was a really bad infection. But, like, I caught it.
Wow.
It's really crazy.
Anyway, but that's what it is. Yeah. First, you have to be able to be conscious enough to say, okay, you know, when I get nervous. I mean, usually people, they do it when there's something going on. They get nervous or...
Like, all the time.
Nothing?
It's one with boredom. Two, with, like, the feeling that, like, a nail is hanging off or something like that.
Right.
I just bought a fidget cube. I
don't get what that thing does.
So let's try to address this specific example. First things first. Get yourself a nail clipper.
Okay.
Whenever you feel you got a hangnail, clip it off.
Okay.
Keep it in your pocket. Okay, that's gonna be trouble on airplanes or whatever. But most of the time you're not on an airplane.
See, I asked somebody if they had a nail clipper in their pocket the other day, mm-hmm. and they looked at me like I was crazy. So like I don't wanna be that guy anymore.
Good. So don't ask. Just carry your own.
Carry a nail clipper.
That's the thing.
Even if you see yourself biting, like, oh god, and run to the bathroom.
You're looking like a weirdo. Like, you're going to hear someone respond.
That only addresses the issue of the uncomfortability of, like, let's say a hangnail that then leads you to bite it off and then creates, you know, a rip further down in the skin. That'll address that. But the biting of the nails itself is a separate issue that I don't think the nail clipper is going to help.
Also, isn't it Muslim Shabbos?
Yeah.
It is?
Shabbos is going to be a little bit more of an issue.
Is that Torah?
What?
Is it
Torah? It's probably some kind of goza. It depends. I mean, if it's falling off and it's mamash almost off already, so that's probably not really an issue. But if it's really well attached and it's not really going to, you know, come off anytime soon, so that is more of an issue.
What about picking hairs?
You should try to avoid picking things off your body on Shabbos.
It's habitual.
A lot of these things are the sources of anxiety.
I have a lot of anxiety in general.
See, that's what you
got to
go for.
Go for
it. I think you got to try to fix that.
Ultimately, yeah.
I have always anxiety.
Oh yeah, but it's not. It's not.
I'm fixing.
You're making him nervous.
Huh?
I'm saying.
He just pulled off his whole hair.
I don't think God created us to feel anxious 24/7.
No, that's fine. But the question is, what do you do with a person that does feel that way?
There were times in my life where I was also feeling anxious every second. And I said, this is not what God, I'm clearly doing something wrong. It's not what God wants.
Okay, but that sort of cold turkey doesn't always work for everybody. Most people need some sort of a way to address it. But we'll get to it. We'll talk about a little bit of some of these things. So the first thing to remember is that it is basically impossible to change a behavior cold turkey. It's not going to work. That, you're going to stop biting your nails by next week, it's going to be finished. No. Except for Julian, but Moshe. But for everyone. Okay, whatever. If it works, it works. I can't. You're an unusual creature. We're very, Baruch Hashem, an unusual creature. But for most people, what it means is that we carry a nail clipper to address certain issues when it comes up. That's sort of like knowing when it happens, because when there is a hangnail, so it leads to it. And the other thing is that, what was I going to say? That if we're able to be conscious of it, and we know when it's starting or happening or whatever, to then be able to have some kind of way of rewarding ourselves if we don't do it. So that this is, I'm recognizing this as a negative behavior in my mind, and I'm gonna put aside, whatever, if I can manage to hold off, but not all day, but for a certain amount of time. You have to figure out a way to make it concrete where, I don't know, we'll have to figure it out, but fine. But that's important, to make small changes that are realistic.
I mean, have you read the 40 Ways of Wisdom? 40 Ways to Wisdom? Bishop and Gabriel, just like 40 Ways. I don't know, Weinberg has a whole
list of
it. Sure. I bought it at the Star Sale.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm obsessed.
Yeah? It's amazing. So maybe you'll have a chance to share with us some of the things that you felt were very valuable. If you feel that you don't understand it and you feel you can understand the bad habit, it may be kedai to keep records of it so you become more aware of when you're doing it. Maybe there is a pattern that you can discover, but but that may not apply in this particular example. No, but that's part of it. In other words, so when you figure out those situations, is it because of your board? Is it because you're bored? Is it something you do when you're trying to focus?
Nervous boredom. Nervous
boredom.
Josh, I have the same exact thing.
I guess those two. Either when I'm nervous or being bored.
So the thing is, if that's true, so then you could try to develop other strategies in the situations where you know you're going to be bored. So come up with a plan what you're going to do in those situations so that you're not bored. Because if you're not...
I'm kidding.
That's not very filling, Neil.
I wish I was... I never have to plan to be bored. Don't be bored.
No, but seriously.
It's like, I mean, like, bored.
When do you have time to be bored?
I mean, you never sit in a class and get bored? You never sit like...
No, but like, I start biting my nails.
Well, sometimes I do this. Sometimes I do this.
I won't even know that's why I'm doing it. And then I'm like, oh my God, like my nails are down to the...
I do that too. I figure out this. Drink
coffee. So that's the type of situation that probably one of those fidgets would work.
Yeah, that's why I bought it. I didn't get it yet in the mail, but I think it's going to help.
But like, also, I'm sitting there doing homework.
3 days.
Right. In other words, it's like sometimes the situations where you're concentrating, right?
It's like a concentration thing too.
So that's what I mean by a fidget. In those situations where it's a result of like concentrating, some people bite their tongues. Some people, there are all kinds of things that people, I know people like, and that's how they focus. Whenever they're focused, I see them doing that. They look bizarre, but that's that they've done their whole life. It's a bad habit that they've developed. It's not a negative thing, except it just looks weird, but like, it doesn't do anything bad. But
you don't have time to be
bizarre. Anyway, but the point is, in those situations where it's a result of like, concentrating type of situation, so find something else, that's why they have these things called fidgets. You ever heard of them?
I don't get it.
Well, like fidget cube?
I've seen it, and I don't get what it does.
You play with it.
I know.
Without thinking.
I was playing with like this thing, and I'm like, it doesn't
No, no, trust me. When you're in class and you're just doing it.
Not when you're in those situations where you're like almost unconsciously biting your nails, catch yourself and then grab the fidget. And with one hand, just like play with the fidget without really thinking instead of biting your nails.
Tell all your friends, all your closest friends, everyone that's in your class. Tell the person next to you in class, if you see me biting my nails, no, just like, give me a little nudge. Therefore, you'll have that. I'm serious. Again, like I'm very convinced about this method. When you get a manicure, it's like your nails are different. Like they're like, you just don't want to bite them.
You're right, but I'm not.
Or you could put horse nail polish, which is like very untasty.
Yeah, my parents used me when I was younger. Like they put like something like some gross smell.
Let's do it together. We'll check up on each other. Because I'm literally like, this is fine, man. I'm stop. These are gross.
Yeah, I know.
Look at that mess.
Mine
are
probably worse.
They're not meat checks, but
mine are way worse.
They're good.
What?
I make skin under my nails.
What Moshe is addressing is the next issue, which is the issue of willpower. So it helps to have other people that are involved that are supporting you. Otherwise, you know, this person wrote this article recommends setting reminders on your phone and stuff like that. You have to be machazik yourself at certain times of day when you feel like you're most likely to do it. Schedules are awesome.
I started doing it and it really was good like the first 2 days I did it and then I fell off because I didn't have any work the next day.
No, but Josh, you really should be at any time where you're bored
and a good taste.
Why?
I don't know.
There are times where
so much stuff to do.
When I just want to relax, like I did all my schoolwork. I practiced guitar already.
Oh, okay. I wish I had that downtime.
Well, like,
I don't have enough downtime.
Like, for example, I'll make a schedule my whole day. I finish things, and then I'm like, okay, like, I have 45 minutes to relax.
Oh, then that's fine. 45 minutes. That's cool.
Or, like, I'm not saying, like...
Watch a YouTube clip. Watch some TED Talks.
I do that, and I sit there, and I bite my nails when I do that.
Yeah, but that's not boredom. That's just...
That's
you feeling... Just to have the habitual.
It is habitual.
I don't know if it's boredom.
It's part boredom. It's like kind of like I don't really know what else to do besides do that.
So that's what I'm trying to suggest. I think you should try to find one of these. They have these fidgets, all kinds of different kinds of fidgets. Try to find something else to do with your hands in those situations.
Yeah, research fidget cube or fidget spinner, and you have these new spinners.
Because all we're trying to do is not make sure you keep your hands under your legs.
Yeah.
We're trying to find something else for you to do with your hands when in those situations when you're doing that. Well, so far that's what we've discussed. Are we taking a break now? Technically, like 11:40. We got plenty of time left. All right, but at least we'll take a break from this topic for now. So we'll.
That can't be.